Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, founder of Gear Media Studios, Passage to Profit co-host, podcast consultant, speaker, and Gearhart Law chief marketing officer.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with celebrities and entrepreneurs about their stories and their business ventures.
Now we're on to Tom Ragg with Loan Depot, who helps people finance their dreams. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Well, it's interesting because I technically work for a company, right? Loan Depot. We're one of the top, if not one of the largest non-bank mortgage lenders in the United States. But when you're a mortgage originator, you technically own your own business because the clients are yours. The actual borrowers become clients of the bank or the IMB. We're an independent mortgage bank. But the referral sources and the people that send business, we call them COIs, Centers of Influence, which I'm sure Sahil could probably help many people in my position develop these types of relationships over time. It's up to the originator to maintain those relationships and keep in touch and make sure that people from the past, current, and future are thinking about you and trying to keep you in mind when someone is buying a house. Those are relationships that last a long time. For instance, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
Yeah, we met on a mortgage deal, didn't we?
Through a mortgage transaction just about 10 years ago. And just is so interesting how things can grow and things can prosper and move forward. But that is the entrepreneurial spirit of being in the mortgage business. And as technology and AI and other advancements in the space actually push the removal of non-performing loan originators because they can be replaced by a technology because they're technically not either savvy or committed or owning the job, right, from an entrepreneurial perspective. So one of the things I hold myself accountable to, Sahil was talking about being accountable and your seven summits. I call it the daily 20 or the pop 100, but 20 times a day, whether it's an email, a get together, a coffee, a podcast, a lunch and learn, a meeting, or some type of get together with people, 20 things a day equals 100 a week. 100 a week is 5,200 a year. If you do that consistently and you wake up every day and you commit yourself to it, then 5,200 sales activities throughout a year will certainly result in more business, but grown organically.
That's great. So how do you, is it just like an email or is it any kind of outreach or any kind of touch? I mean, how do you count these?
Well, I actually count them on a scratch pad and then I toss it in the trash because it makes me feel good. I literally go with, you know, little marks on a piece of paper because I want to make sure I do 20. If I'm being truly lazy, I may send an email and copy 20 to 30 people blind copied, but that doesn't really count. It counts to me to a certain extent, but anytime I can just get that, it's kind of like waking up and holding yourself accountable for the gym. You were mentioning earlier that you're holding yourself accountable for calories, right? So if you can't measure it, you can't manage it is kind of my mantra. I don't have that on a bumper sticker on my car, but I have thought about it.
You could trademark it, though.
Technically, I could. I did inherit that from one of my partners many, many years ago. But truly holding yourself accountable, I think, is important. And as an entrepreneur, you know, technically in the mortgage space, if I don't hold myself accountable, then I'm really just doing my family a disservice. But people sometimes ask me, you know, how's business? Are you busy? Depends who they are and how frank I want to be. But generally I say, if I'm not busy, then I'm not working. And I hold myself accountable for that.
So what are you telling people about the market these days and interest rates and availability of funds for mortgages and qualifying and all that stuff? Mm-hmm.
Well, I would tell you the pendulum has swung back. In 2008, we had what was called the mortgage meltdown. It was extremely easy to get a mortgage in 06, 07 and into 08. And then everything came crashing down because there were just too many loose ends on mortgages. But now here we are in 2025 and people want to buy homes. You know, I live in New Jersey, but we're here in New York City. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, affectionately known as the tri-state area, seems to be overwhelmingly popular, very, very dense. And I would tell you, New Jersey, where I live, is the densest state in the country. So people always are buying and selling across the state. Interest rates have come down lately, as interest rates do fall in line. You know, in 2020, when we had the pandemic, rates hit an all-time low, a 50-year low. I don't think anyone would ever want something like that to come back. But we are headed in the right direction. In the last couple of years, we were up towards the 8% mark for mortgages. Back in the 70s, you know, when President Carter was in office, the interest rates were in the high teens, 17, 18. But then you could buy a house for $75,000 or $100,000. In today's world, you're looking, you know, usually $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 and above. So the interest rates have actually been doing pretty well. The Fed has been meeting this year and lowering the federal funds rate, which is loosely tied to mortgages, but not directly. But we've seen some really cooperative interest rates over the last 12 to 18 months, and things have really come in line. So lots of people in the country, you know, spend anywhere between, say, $500 or $600 a month if they're living with their friends from college and splitting a three bedroom into six guys or girls, up to, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 a month for people that are borrowing, you know, multi-million dollars and paying high taxes. So there's a big range.
So there's a lot of talk now about affordability. And when I hear that, I kind of start thinking about housing and affordability. How are real estate prices now? And people talk about first homes in their 40s, if they ever get there.
Right. Right.
Do you have any thoughts about this situation that we're in?
Right. Well, I would tell you that homes in the United States are expensive. It's not easy to find an affordable home unless you're in, you know, towards the middle of the country, it gets a little more affordable. But you've got families that hold themselves accountable. You generally have dual income. People think they need to put down 20%. But the market doesn't require that. There are loans with 3% down, 3.5% down, 5% down, 10% down. So you can get into a home with little money out of pocket versus what people think is the norm.
You think that part of the affordability may just people are not informed about the possibilities? Do you think that they're all thinking 20% and saying, oh, I'm never going to be able to afford it?
A lot of people are absolutely thinking that. So back to our previous discussion, I think that type of information can easily be shared with potential customers and home buyers through human interaction, not necessarily technology.
There you go. Sahil Mehta.
Tom, you help people buying their dream home, perhaps even their first home, as you mentioned. In the world that we live in, there's so many options. However, someone comes to you because they trust you. They trust you that you are going to help them make the right decision for them to decide which home to go for, what type of mortgage to pick. How are you building that trust? Because someone can like you and spend time with you, but make such a big decision and probably one of the top three decisions in their life, they're coming to you for your direction and support. So I'd love to know how you build trust with your potential customers.
First, you build trust with the lead source, which takes time. But when it comes to the customer, I think education is the main piece. And once I've done my original introductory call with the customer, they've met me for the first time. I think another interesting thing to say is we all know in this room, you only get one chance at a first impression, right? So that first 30 to 60 seconds on the phone or in person is extremely important. If they don't quote unquote like you, that's generally a problem. I just try and be a teacher, really, because I think that at the end of the day, the more I teach my potential customer, if they were to, say, speak with another mortgage lender or another private mortgage banker, I think that the information that I've shared and my ability to educate them and make them feel comfortable will hopefully reinforce that they should work with me versus, say, somebody else. Because as you mentioned, it could be their dream home, it could be their first time home buying experience, and my job is to deflate any stress and make it happy. Because if you think about it, people are buying a house, they're generally going to live in that house, they're going to celebrate holidays, have meals, raise children, dogs, mow the lawn, make lemonade, and then celebrate around the fireplace. And you want them moving into that house with a big smile. So that's a big reason I tend to attend all of my closings, which a lot of mortgage originators don't do. But I think, again, the in-person touch is key. And education really goes a long way. And when I get off the phone with somebody, I can tell you they feel much more comfortable buying, whether it's a $100,000 house or a $3 million house, They feel much more comfortable with the process because they understand the numbers. And now they get to go out and shop and actually find that house. Hopefully the dream home. But in today's world, there's the starter home. And then potentially down the road, you can find that dream home. But always having the opportunity is the most important thing. And we try and make people comfortable so they can buy their home and move in with a smile.
So can you help people? Let's say this happens. I don't know that we've ever had this happen, but it's been close. That they want to buy a house and the appraisal comes back and it's appraised less than what the loan that they need to buy the house.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help people with that situation?
Absolutely.
Well, what do you do?
In many instances, it depends on the contract and what the realtor or the client has agreed to. But in many cases, people waive the appraisal. If there are multiple bids on a house, they will tell the seller, I am not going to back out of this transaction based on the appraised value, which right there's the answer to your question. They just have to come up with the extra money. They can't get out of it, right? So we make sure they have that money and we make sure that they understand the risk. But in many cases, they don't do that in terms of waiving the appraisal. That actually allows the buyer to go back to the seller and negotiate a lower price.
So that's what help them do.
In many instances, it actually becomes good news for the buyer. Not so much for the seller, but if the buyer is my client, I'm a little sorry for the seller, but sometimes we've got sellers that think their houses are worth much more than they actually are. However, when you have 15 people who want to buy it, it might actually be worth more than it's being listed for. So that is the market demand type situation. But yeah, generally, if you're going to buy a house and you're worried about the appraisal, you might not want to buy that house.
So if you have your own business or you're an entrepreneur, how is that different when you're applying for a mortgage than somebody who works maybe for a big company?
Self-employed is an interesting part of our business. Technically, the rates are the same. There's no difference in interest rates. Interest rates are technically based on your credit score, the type of dwelling, and how much money you put down, the down payment, and how long you lock the rate for. Self-employed folks, they qualify just the same way. Instead of showing pay stubs and W-2s, though, they generally show tax returns. And then we also have programs, which I couldn't get into in this particular forum, but we have programs that really help self-employed borrowers buy homes without tax returns, believe it or not. We make sure that they have filed their tax returns and that they don't owe federal debt. But there are many, many instances in our country where we have used bank statement programs, profit and loss statements prepared by accountants and CPAs, business tax returns, personal tax returns, and or a combination of all of those things. There are plenty of lenders in the country that participate in what's called the non-qualified mortgage, the non-QM space. I'm doing a couple of those right now where these folks work, they work hard, they bring in money, but their businesses offset a lot of the income, so they don't necessarily pay a large amount of money in federal income taxes to the government, which is completely legal. On paper, it looks like they don't necessarily have enough money to afford a mortgage. However, they do because it's right on the bank statements and you can see that. And they have good, you know, technically good to great credit and they're allowed to buy a house just like anybody else. But even in those instances, if the tax returns do make sense, that's where the human element comes in. We vet what route would be best for the customer. And I would tell you as well, which is the good news, is that the interest rates for non-qualified mortgages are not so significantly higher anymore versus the traditional straight full documentation loans. So if regular rates are say in the mid sixes, you could add a quarter to a half a percent for non-QM and it's still pretty competitive. Then of course the customer doesn't have to worry again about, am I going to qualify, because they have a professional like me or someone who is like me to handle their loan and make sure that it's smooth and get them into their house that they want with little headaches.
I want to buy a house, right? I want to buy a house and I shouldn't only be looking at the purchase price. There are closing costs, there are running costs. Mm-hmm. So how are you advising me so that I don't end up buying, you know, something that I thought was within my budget, but turns out to start draining my monthly income? How do you guide me?
Yeah, we guide you right to the penny, actually. We bring up the house generally on the multiple listing service. We know the potential purchase price. We also have your range of purchase price. In New Jersey and many states around the country, the real estate taxes is a big factor. We put the closing costs on paper in writing. We send them to you. and we talk about it and we make sure you're comfortable. If you're not comfortable, then we either find you another house or we reduce the price and you look at a different type of property, and we want to make sure that you can afford it, right? So again, back to the education, it's really important. People want things on paper, right? You could talk to people about it and put it on a cocktail napkin, but when you send them an estimate with a barcode with their name on it, it makes them feel good. And of course, it is good because all the disclosures tied to the mortgage business in the United States protect the borrower. We are required to make sure that it's accurate as your mortgage representatives, but all of the disclosures protect the borrower. So there's no way you can ever be bait and switched or duped or see higher closing costs at the closing table versus what was told to you at the beginning. So it's actually a great, great thing because we're protected, you're protected. And again, our job is to get you into a place where you can go buy a house and feel comfortable and happy and raise your family and enjoy holidays and cooking meals and sitting around the fireplace.
And we do in our house. We have to wrap this up, Tom. Who do you work with? Do you work with people across the country or just in the tri-state?
I do. I'm licensed in several states technically, but my phenomenal company. I love my company that I work with at Loan Depot. My boss, Phil Iosa, and our president, Tom Fidler, are phenomenal, phenomenal mortgage gentlemen. They've been around for many, many years. The company, Loan Depot, was founded in 2010, and our chairman of the board, Anthony, just came back to be the CEO. So there's exciting things going on at Loan Depot, and we're excited for the future. But really, the motto at the company is home means everything, and the foundation is the customer. So if we concentrate on the customer, we always feel that the success will come to us. And that's what we do. We help people buy houses. It's really a great thing.
It is. And how do people get a hold of you if they want to work with you personally?
I can be found at www.loandepot.com. Just search Tom Ragg, W-R-A-G-G, and I come right up on Google. Okay. Thank you so much, Elizabeth and Richard.
Passage to Profit is a Gear Media Studios production. It's a nationally syndicated radio show appearing on 40 stations across the U.S. In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters Database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey, our studio assistant Rissakat Busari, and our social media powerhouse Carolina Tabares. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.